Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Jesse Oseda, 20 years of career experience, a senior backstep firefighter with the Philadelphia Fire Department on Ladder 14, which is one of the busiest ladders in Philly. Jesse is a second-generation firefighter. Although he wanted nothing to do with the fire service at first, he then ended up following the footsteps of his father, also a truckie, who retired with over 25 years of dedicated service. Jesse loves the job and has a smile on his face every time he shows up for duty. His end goal is simple, leave the job better than he found it, and also going to fires. With that, I present Mr. Jesse Oseda.
My name is Jesse Oseda. I'm a second generation firefighter and EMT with City of Philadelphia. I've been in the fire department for a little over 20 years. I'm currently assigned to Ladder 14 in North Philly. I was also assigned to Engine 45 for 2 years, which is the engine company housed with Ladder 14. And I was stationed at Ladder 9 in Center City for a year and a half. Okay. So in Philadelphia, we don't have drivers or chauffeurs. Everyone rotates positions on the apparatus that they're assigned to. So for us, a new guy would, you know, start out on the back step. After a while, they get tiller trained. Then after about a year of driver training and studying the local, then they get qualified to drive. So not everyone on the job gets cross-trained on both the engine and the ladder, but it definitely helps to be versatile because there are times when you might get detailed or work overtime at other companies that, you know, they might need a driver or a tillerman, or in a rare case, you know, you might even have to operate an apparatus on the fire ground.
Okay. All right. It's kind of interesting. You said, so out of the entire, which I'll ask that question coming up next, but out of the entire department, there are no engineers, no chauffeurs at all.
No.
Ah, that's what I'm saying. I like doing this because I like hearing how different departments do things. For those that don't know, can you tell us about Philadelphia, the size, how many stations, personnel, things of that nature?
Sure. PFD is, you know, we're one of the oldest fire departments in the U.S. And I believe with our current stats, we're the seventh largest in the country. We have around 2,700 employees. We have three divisions, 13 battalions. There's 59 engines, 27 truck companies, two squad companies, one heavy rescue. I think we're up to 60 medic units now. They're mixed ALS, BLS. We got one hazmat unit, two wildfire trucks or grass firefighter trucks, and we got two marine units. I think there's 10 airport crash trucks down at Philadelphia International. We receive around 400,000 calls per year, and we have about 3,000 structure fires a year. And that averages out to about 8 per day. We also have the busiest medic unit in the country for the last 4 years in a row. That's Medic 8 in the Kensington section of Philadelphia. So for, you know, our apparatus, we got a mixed bag, all different manufacturers, you know, mostly Spartans, but there's a bunch of KMEs, Pierce ladders. We got a few Seagrave ladder towers. And most of our reserve trucks are American LeFrance, which I personally love that truck, but
yes,
the manufacturer is no longer in business. So
no,
we can't get them anymore.
No, unfortunately not. Yeah. I hated that. Yeah.
They were my favorite, you know.
Okay. That's a wild stat, man. 3,000 working structure fires, which averages about 8 structure fires a day.
Yep.
Wow. Damn. Okay.
Ranging anywhere from, you know, small fire to, you know,
right,
fully evolved, but could be anything. But.
Okay. How did you choose Philly? Now, because you said you're a second generation firefighter, so like, did you apply anywhere else and Philly responded back, or?
No, not at all. I live in Philly, so that was it or nothing. My dad, retired from the PFT maybe about 15 years ago, and he had, he retired with 29 years on. So you'd think naturally that would be, my profession of choice, but didn't have a whole lot of interest in it growing up, actually. I know guys have wanted this job since, they were little kids. But I think that, growing up, I might have inadvertently heard one of my dad's crazy fire stories or EMS stories, and that kind of deterred me from it. I was I started off, went to high school, did pretty well. Tried college for a little bit. I got a small scholarship, and I lasted the whole week in college. So I knew right away, that wasn't for me. My professor told me, "You have an 8-page paper due by next week," and I was just like, "All right, see ya, I'm out of here." It's not for me. I returned my books, and it cost me about $100 for that week that I did college, and it was the best money I ever spent. I got guys riding the back step next to me that are, $100,000 in debt with a college degree, and they're doing the same job. So that was a cheap lesson for me. After college, boy, after my long college career, I went to work in a factory. Then I had a couple kids, so I knew I needed something better than that. So I applied for a construction company that did, mostly road work. And the interview, the guy said, "You know how to operate a shovel?" I said, "Yes, sir." "All right, well, you're hired." That was the extent of that. So they're doing highway construction, blacktop concrete, pretty much just shoveling rocks for a living. It was pretty brutal. 10 to 12 hour days working on a chain gang, outside in the cold and doing backbreaking labor. But that definitely taught me the meaning of hard work and mental toughness, more than anything. If you could push yourself like that and endure those types of conditions, pretty much do anything. So doing highway construction for a couple of years, and that's when my dad told me, the fire department test is coming up, and that's when I really thought, this could be something. This could be a career that I could get into. Like fire service could be definitely something, definitely better than what I'm doing. So, I got the study book that they gave out. I made up flashcards. I cut out every single line in the book they gave me, and kept repeating them over and over, backwards, forwards. And next thing I know, I was 24 years old in the Philadelphia Fire Academy. And as soon as it started, I just completely fell in love with the job just right away. I love getting my hands dirty, working with tools, basically getting paid to work out. So this was perfect for me. I'd never experienced that type of camaraderie before either. It was, cadets. We helped each other. We picked each other up. We PT together. We got to crawl into fires as a team, and we're doing things like rappelling down the side of a building using chainsaws, halligans, axes, climbing ladders, and I just absolutely loved it. It was amazing. It was way beyond anything I could imagine. And, a lot of us started, hanging out on the weekends, studying together, and we forged a bunch of friendships that, we're going through the same struggles together, and you still have, still talk to guys today. We still hang out, and it's just such a bond, going through fire school together. It really is. So I was doing well at fire school. I was about halfway through. Then one day, a couple of the officers, they pulled me aside, and they told me that my dad, who had probably about 25 years on the job at the time, he was working a basement fire, and he had fallen off a roof. Second fire that day, and he fell off a roof, and he fell into another firefighter working on the deck below, and he went up with a broken back in like three spots and like a shit ton of other injuries. So I'm in fire school, and they came and they got me, and this is what they told me. So I was amazed at how tough he was, because he not only came back to the job, but he made it to my graduation. They you know, they rolled his crippled ass out in a wheelchair. And after about 9 months or so, he, you know, he came back to work. So
okay.
People at the time, they asked me, you know, if that had discouraged me at all, or, you know, made me second guess, you know, if I still wanted a job or thought about quitting, you know, how dangerous it was. And here's, you know, and I can say, honestly, it made me want it even more. You know, I saw firsthand, like, how dangerous it could be and, like, what was at stake. But, you know, I saw how strong he was, and I knew what the job meant to him. And, you know, I knew it was worth the risk. I wanted to be as tough and fearless as he was. And I wanted to be, you know, him to be proud of me. So he always told me, you know, it was the best job in the world. And, you know, he wasn't kidding. You know, even after 20 years on the job, you know, I've seen a lot of death, a lot of destruction, a lot of trauma. You know, I've had two of my lieutenants die in the line of duty, and I still love the job. You know, I still love going to work every day. I got a big ass smile on my face when I go to work. Still love going to fires. I love going out training, working out, you know, learning, and, you know, doing what I can to help people.
Okay. All right. What did your dad retire as?
He retired, I guess it was about 15 years ago. He was a ladder 29 for most of his career. He did come back to his ladder company after that, you know, incident. But he only lasted a couple of years. He said he didn't want, you know, he didn't feel 100%. So he went up driving a chief for the next couple of years.
Okay. Okay. What rank did he retire as?
He was a firefighter.
Firefighter too. Okay. Okay. What's your minimum staffing like on the engines and ladders at Philly?
So minimum staffing we have is contractual. So we have four apparatus. We run with three firefighters and one officer for our engine companies, and four firefighters and one officer for our ladders.
Okay.
But right now, almost every company is assigned one firefighter heavy. So if everybody's in for that shift, you know, nobody's out sick or injured or on vacation, we have to detail a guy to another company. Most of the time, guys wind up in the medic units, you know, detailed in there somewhere throughout the city.
Okay. Okay. So, that was actually one of my other questions. Do you have to rotate between the truck and the medic, or is it something where, like, is it seniority based? The longer you've been on, the more you don't have to do that anymore.
Yes. So guys with, I believe it's over 12 years on, are, you know, no longer in the medic unit rotation. So all the junior guys with 12 years and under, you know, they have a BLS rotation. They're going, you know, they do like a tour in a certain medic unit, and then they'll be back in the firehouse maybe. But also there's like the day-to-day, you know, like, oh, this, you know, this paramedic called out, so you're up, you're in. So it's kind of, you know, guys are not huge fans of it, but it is what it is.
It is what it is. Right.
The medic unit.
Right. Okay. And if you're assigned on the medic unit, are you strictly there for EMS calls, or can you go to fire calls and act like a firefighter?
It's strictly medic. It's strictly EMS. It's mostly paramedics and EMTs. But when firefighters are in there, it's, you know, you're just basically EMTs. We will, you know, they will send them to working fires, just to stand by and just in case or whatever, or if they have to transport a patient. But you're not no firefighting duties.
Okay.
You're in medic.
Okay. All right. And what's the work schedule like for Philly?
We have four platoons. It's A, B, C, and D. We work 2 10-hour days and then 2 14-hour night works. Then we have 4 days off. So it's 48 hours total. But the 4 days off we get, I love it. It's amazing.
Okay.
You know, you can work mutuals, or we call them MXDs. You extend those 4 days off by a lot, you know, if you have a vacation scheduled or planned. You know, but the 4 days off, I you know, I've heard about other schedules and stuff like that, but I love that. It's, you know, you get to run errands or go to the gym or go golfing on a random Tuesday when, you know, everybody else is working their 9 to 5.
Right.
So it's great. I love it.
Okay. So you said you have shifts where you work 10-hour days, and then there's shifts where you come in strictly at night for 12 hours, and then you're off for four.
Yeah, it's 2 10-hour days, then 2 14-hour nights, and then you're off for four.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. Cool. So one of your questions that you want to definitely hit on was how important the senior man is. And so just from what I can see through social media and things of that nature with Philadelphia, Philadelphia seems like it has a history of culture there. Like you're the new guy, you're gonna pretty much do what you need to do until you can get up in rank and seniority where you then pass it on to the next person. So is that kind of accurate how that works in Philly?
Definitely, definitely. It's more, you're trading hard work for knowledge. I mean, the senior guys have the knowledge, and the new guys, you show you're a hard worker and you want to learn, and that's how they pass it on. So, like me, for out of fire school, when I first started at Ladder 14, some of my senior guys, gonna name drop if you don't mind, Joe McKenna, Jimmy Sullivan, Richie Porter. And Billy Mitchell, they called him Billy from Philly, and they were senior ladder guys on each platoon when I got there. And these guys had anywhere from 25 to 35 years on the job. It was great. I learned a ton from this guy. I would stick around after my shift and just pick their brains, ask them a million questions. And there's still something that Billy Mitchell told me that I still do all the time. And he said, everywhere you go, whether you're at work or home, wherever, anytime you walk up to a house or a building, ladder that building in your mind. Like visualize exactly where you would put your ladders, which ones you would use. And I still do that, and everywhere I go. And like if you're on a medical call, you're waiting for a rescue squad, I look at how I ladder that building. I look at the building layout, location of the windows, the cellar, basement stairs, the types of doors and locks, the front and back doors. And you get really good at, fast size up if you do that all the time. It's second nature to you. And he told me that, and I was also really busy my first couple of years. Philly back in the 2000s was really really burning. So like I started to get a little cocky. I get that couple years on, and I know what I'm doing. That was one call I had in particular that. I was on the back step, and I remember we were coming back from a crazy run I had with Richie Porter, who had 35 years on at the time. And he said, I've never seen that before. And like as a new guy, that just totally blew my mind. Like here's a guy who's 35 years at one of the busiest ladder companies in the country, and he's still seeing new things, So there's no way possible that you can know everything or see everything or know exactly what to do in every situation. So that completely humbled me. I learned that there's no reason any firefighter should ever be cocky, no matter how much experience you have. Because and because of that, I always want to train. I always want to learn. I always want to see new techniques, new methods, and new situations so that I'm more prepared when I get that, oh shit, I've never seen that before, type of moment. But I do gotta say, besides having great senior guys, I've learned a whole lot in my career from making mistakes. They're lessons that get burned into your brain because you never want to make those mistakes again. And I'll be the first to tell the guys, when we're training, like I know this because I fucked up and I tried to do it this way before, and it doesn't work. I looked like and I felt like an idiot. Like so, don't do it that way. Do it this way. This way works. So, I feel like that's a huge part of training is, being humble. You not only have to admit your mistakes, but teach them to other firefighters so they don't make those same mistakes. You don't only train on what to do, you train on what not to do as well. So, as a senior man, I love when new guys want to get better. They're hungry for information. They want to train. So I feel like it's my obligation to pass on the knowledge and experience, that I've acquired over the years. It'd be pointless and selfish to hold all that in and not teach what you learned. So, that's why I love training. Helps the newer guys, but it also helps me too. It helps me stay sharp. A lot of the job is muscle memory, and you need to keep repeating it over and over and over and over until you no longer have to think about it. It should be just second nature. You shouldn't have to think about the steps to raise a ladder. You just do it. So you focused on more important things, like, you know, the ladder placement, where the power lines come in, you know, which way is the wind blowing, where's the fire, what tools do I need, what needs to get done next, like, you know, stuff like that. Like, so when newer guys, you know, they get detailed in or they're working overtime at our station, we try to go over as much as we can in the station. But if possible, we'll take them out to a vacant building in our local, and, you know, that way they can throw ladders, talk about, you know, what we do and why, let them get their hands on the ladders and the tools. Because I think that, you know, reading about it is good, seeing it done is better. But when you do it yourself and you get your hands on and you feed it, you know, over and over, it's definitely the best way to learn. And, you know, there'll always be, you know, there's guys that don't make every fire, guys that are working slower parts of the city, and they don't get to get that hands-on training. So that's why I like having the helmet camera, you know, in the YouTube channel. I post a lot of our jobs, you know, for our guys mostly, but, you know, as, you know, so we can train and basically Monday morning quarterback them, like, every, you know, talk about what we did, you know, why we did it. You know, every situation on the fire ground is different, and I want my guys to see, you know, what happened and what we did, and anyone else that wants to watch them, you know, that's awesome. I want the fire service as a whole to be better. So I tell everybody, these are not highlight reels. Like, I don't put them up on YouTube to show off or brag about how many fires we get. You know, fires don't burn any hotter in Philadelphia. Like, you know, I put them on there so that guys can see the real world situations and conditions. You know, fire ground is a chaotic mess, and, you know, you're making split second decisions based on like a 2 second size up that you might get. And those decisions might not always be the perfect ones, but you make your best ones by relying on, you know, your knowledge, your training, your experience. So I feel like it's, you know, it's very important to critique our jobs afterwards and to learn from them. And, you know, I think first person video is a great way to do that. You know, it gets the discussion going, you know, about what went smooth, what we could have done differently or better, you know, why. So I love talking tactics too. Well, guys, you know, if they want to watch the videos and comment or ask questions, you know, I try to respond as much as I can, you know, about the challenges we had, or, you know, we had to overcome on a particular incident, or why we did something a certain way, or maybe how it didn't go as smoothly as planned. You know, maybe your department does things differently and you want to talk about that. And, you know, I'm all for it. I love it. We do, you know, always, we have the same goals as every fire department, you know, life safety, property conservation, incident stabilization. But sometimes, you know, things don't go so smooth. I love the line from Casino too. You know, they complain because things don't run so smooth. Well, in my line of work, things don't run so smooth. So, you know, everyone makes mistakes, but we got to make sure we learn from them and we don't repeat them. And that's why I think it's, you know, it's important to see that first person video of a fire scene. So, you know, I'll keep posting them, and I do my best to keep my camera charged. I've lost the countless videos of jobs because I forget to charge the battery. So
that's, I can imagine.
I gotta stay on top of that.
Okay. All right. So got a couple questions. First one. So once you got out of recruit class, you were assigned to ladder 14, and you've been there since.
I did maybe about 12 years, and then the city did a mass rotation where I got moved to Ladder 9 in Center City. And then I did a year and a half there, and then I came back in the engine at my station. Okay. I did 2 years in the engine and then crossed back over to the ladder.
Okay. Okay. All right. Are you an engine guy or a ladder guy? Just asking.
Definitely a ladder guy. Definitely a ladder guy.
Ladder guy. Okay.
I mean, I like learning the engine. It was fun. It was a whole lot of fun. I mean, I had a lot of really good tip jobs, you know, a lot of heavy fire throughout the kind of, you know, but there's nothing like hanging off a 35-foot ladder, you know, smashing out windows. That's just, you know, I'm kind of built for that. So.
Okay. Okay. By watching your videos, it's probably going to be safe to say that ladders do ladder work, engines do engine work, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Is it standard practice where you guys pull up, let's just say it's a, I don't know, 2 or 3 story row home that's on fire, I always see in your videos, most of the time you either utilize the aerial if possible or throw a ground ladder and go straight to the roof. That's like automatic.
Yeah, well, we have so we kind of split up into, we have our roof team, our driver towmen are usually our roof team.
Okay.
So they're usually throwing either the main ladder in the aerial or a 35-foot extension ladder to the roof. Then our inside hook guys throwing a ground ladder in front and usually taking the second floor windows, or if it's a three-story, it would be the third top-down ventilation. But so everybody's kind of doing their own thing. Everybody knows their job and just kind of we just go to work. So depends on what your riding position is for that day. So I might be driving, or I might be touring, or I might that's you get different perspectives from different videos.
Okay. And it's one thing that I noticed too with the way Philly's built, like the way that the structures are put together, there are sometimes where I've seen you get to the roof and then you're going to the what I would call the Charlie side or the number three side, and you'll peek over and then you'll use whatever tool and kind of like use it as a fulcrum and break the windows out because there's really no good way to get in on the other side. I mean, I thought that was neat.
Yeah, that's our main goal. We got to ventilate as quickly as possible because our engine company is very good. So they're in there right away, water on the fire. So you want to ventilate, you want to coordinate that ventilation, so it's basically it's the second we get up there, we're we try to lean over, take the front, side windows, unless our inside hook guy has already done it or he's on the ladder about to do it, in which case you go up and over and you take the back and the breezeway, the side windows, try to ventilate the top down as quickly as possible.
Okay. What are some of the challenges though? Because I mean, narrow roads, if you got cars parked on each side, I mean, I've never been to Philly. I've only seen pictures and videos, especially your videos and like on the internet and stuff, but it seems like Philly's got a lot of like older construction homes or vacant homes, and it's kind of like Philly looks like Baltimore-ish type to me.
Yeah, I mean, they kind of both cities kind of started around the same time. So we have buildings that are over 100 years old, and they're just in complete disrepair. So most of them are, going to be two or three story row homes, especially where I work. Maybe like in the Northeast or certain parts of the city, there's, single family dwellings and stuff like that. But the heart of Philly is the row home, and it's they're old and they're all interconnected. They're 15 feet wide by 45 feet deep usually, flat roof. So a lot of it's like I say, it's a lot of repetition because thankfully most of the buildings in our local are similar, so we don't have crazy amount of different structures. So we kind of have are able to game plan a little easier and keep it kind of the same. But it's the level of disrepair and the vacant buildings, it's huge. It's another
Right.
challenge for us, and it's a huge life hazard. We're going into these places and there's holes in the floor. You might fall through a hole in the floor, and next thing you're in a basement. So it's tough. There are some structures that we definitely should not be inside.
Okay. All right. What is a typical shift for y'all, run wise? And what is the most that you've ever had on a shift?
Well, the medic unit definitely runs the most. They're out pretty much all day. Our engine runs the second most. They could get anywhere from, let's say, I mean, they get alarm systems, they'll get shoe runs or medical runs. They're probably anywhere from 2 to 12 a day. And the ladder gets, depending on the day, we might get from like 1 to 5 maybe.
Okay.
We do stuck elevators, lift assist, force plenary, we're assist the police or structure fires. We kind of run different types of calls,
Right. Okay.
but not as many. We do, occasionally have a medical calls too. I would say structure fires, I think I've had 3 in one day. That's probably the most. But run wise, I think I've been in the engine where we did maybe 15 runs that day.
Okay. I had a question and I'm losing it now. Nope, got it, got it. What does a typical box drop in Philly? That's what I wanted to ask you earlier.
It's four engines, two ladders, and two chiefs.
Okay.
That's for a box.
And then that's initial. And then if you upgrade it to a second, what do you get then?
Well, there's tactical boxes, which is two engines, two ladders, and the chief, which is, it might be like a report of a stove fire or an appliance or something like that. So that's kind of like smaller than like a report of a fire would be a box. Second alarm, you're getting a whole bunch more. You get another four engines, it's pretty much double. Four engines, two ladders, and two more chiefs. They start adding all kinds of ES chiefs and, you know, EMS chiefs and safety chiefs and stuff like that. So,
Okay. All right. What does the term aggressive mean to you?
Aggressive, I don't want to say, you know, most people probably think that it means, you know, head down, charge in. No, but to me, it's the opposite. You know, it's knowing what needs to get done, knowing how to do it, and acting without hesitation. You know, slow is smooth, smooth is fast. And that's why, you know, we don't run on the fire ground. We walk with a purpose. If you're calm and you focus on slowing your breathing down, controlling your adrenaline, you know, it's much easier to think. Firefighters by nature, you know, we're problem solvers. So it's definitely harder to solve problems if you're out of breath, if your adrenaline is jacked, if your heart rate's going a mile a minute. So if you slow your breathing down, it's much easier to pay attention to details and not get tunnel vision. So part of aggressive is, you know, making informed decisions and making those decisions as quickly as possible. So every member should be doing a constant size up to find the fastest, safest way to extinguish the fire. And, you know, make sure everybody goes home after. And we make our decisions based on information we gather through our size. So the more information we have, the better decisions. So communication is extremely important. You always want to have your head up, your ears open, and communicate, you know, what you hear, what you see, what you feel. And even if it's not important enough to go over radio and say, you know, yell it out to your company so everybody's on the same page. You know, from the moment we arrive on scene, we're trying to figure out, you know, where the fire is, how big it is, and where it's going to go next. And knowing these things and communicating them as they happen, you know, they help everyone to make informed decisions. So everybody should know their job, know their priorities, know what needs to get done, you know, without being told to do it. Like when my ladder company pulls up their fire ground, by the time the officer gets off, you know, and turns around, like it's a ghost town. So, you know, everyone's already gone. You know, we're in service. Like no one needs to be told what to do, what ladders to bring, you know, where to put them or when to ventilate. You know, we're in service. This, you know, this confidence is a huge part of it. You know, you gotta believe in yourself, make your decisions based on your training and your experience. You know, you gotta stay dedicated to your craft, and, you know, we always strive to be the best. So we should all know exactly, you know, what needs to get done and in what order. But we make those small decisions, you know, so that the officer can focus on the big decisions, you know. And that's where our training comes in. Because, you know, we need to be able to, like, read smoke, understand building construction, anticipate fire spread. And we should know about fire dynamics and flow path. You know, there's something that really important. We should have a familiarization with the different structures in our local. You know, you should know the fastest route to get there and have a general idea of the interior layout. You know, we pay attention when we go out on medical calls or alarm systems, and, you know, just we talk about these buildings, how they're constructed, you know, is there a basement, is there a cellar, is there access to the rear of the property, you know, what kind of roof is there, what condition is the property in, you know, where would you put your ladders, where's the closest hydrant. So there's no cookie cutter buildings, just like there is no cookie cutter fires.
Right.
They're always going to be different. And, you know, the saying improvise, adapt, and overcome, you know, that means everything goes there. You know, we should train and pre-plan on what to do if, you know, say A doesn't work. If you go with plan B, C, D, and E, you should have that all ready just in case. I would say that it can be a challenge for us when, you know, we have other guys working that are not from our company.
I was getting ready to ask that. Okay.
Like, if they're either detailed in or overtime or whatever, like, you might not be able to be as aggressive as you normally are because, you know, you don't know their strengths or their weaknesses or what level of training they have. So it is very important at shift change. You know, we go over the apparatus with them. We talk about how we run, you know, what tools or what hose line to use, where they're going to be on the truck, and, you know, what that member's responsibilities would be on the fire ground. So we try to do a quick training session at the beginning of every shift just to, you know, get everybody on the same page.
Okay. If your officer's out, do they send you another officer or does somebody ride up?
No, we used to do that. We used to have acting out of rank, but we got it in our contract. They have to hire another officer either overtime or send them in from somewhere else. So.
Okay. 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 So if that does occur at shift change, do you guys as a group go, hey, whoever it is, this is how we operate. So that way when they do get there and they turn around, they're not like, oh crap, where the hell is everybody? Like, I mean, do you guys go over that?
Not so much. I mean, we try to go more over with the firefighters we're, you know, working with, like the back step. The officers mainly in charge of communication.
Okay.
And, you know, usually they'll go and take a look at the rear, see what the rear property looks like and communicate to the chief and stuff like that. So they're not really as important as the guys on the back step with you. You know, that really, you know, that's your lifeline right there. That's your guys, you know, that need to do the job and you gotta make sure that everybody's on the same page.
Okay. Okay. Which characteristic holds more weight in your opinion? Years of service, education, work ethic, or on the job experience?
Definitely got to go with on the job experience. Education, extremely important in our job. I think that you should always continue to learn and, you know, better yourself. But being book smart and having a bunch of certs isn't the same as, you know, getting your hands on something, you know, and actually doing it. You can learn about flashover and breathing smoke and ventilation, but, you know, until you've been inside with a line, you know, you don't truly understand it. You know, you can't recreate the unbearable heat from a fire blowing over your head. You know, you're trying to make the second floor and then, you know, hearing the sound of those windows being taken, feeling the heat, the smoke start to lift, and knowing it's time to make your push. You know, you can't learn that in a book. You can read a ton of books on forcible entry, but unless you actually put your hands on a Halligan and a flathead axe, you don't understand, you know, the weight and the pressure that's needed for that tool for the proper technique of forcing the door. And the same goes for work ethic. We have newer guys that, you know, they want to jump off the piece running down the street and ready to put their head through a wall. But, you know, they get gassed and they're spent halfway through the job.
Right. Because
they don't know how to slow themselves down and use proper technique instead of, you know, brute force. So there's no replacement for, you know, on the job experience. Seeing and doing things firsthand is definitely, you know, has the most weight of any of those. And time on the job, honestly doesn't mean a whole lot. It can be very deceptive. You know, I've seen guys that have had 30 years on and Hall of Fame careers and do everything, you know, I try to do everything I can to be like those guys. And then I've seen guys with 30 years on that have been bums for their whole 30 years. So, you know, I wouldn't want my worst enemy working with those guys. So
right.
It's definitely deceptive.
Okay. Like the answer. How important, which I mean, I can tell just from the video that, which the listeners can't see that, but how important is physical fitness for you?
It's absolutely huge. For me, I'm a certified personal trainer and nutritionist.
Okay.
I play ice hockey once or twice a week. I lift weights at the firehouse every shift. When I'm working, I usually go to the gym at least one of my 4 days off. You know, I love the sauna. I'm a huge proponent of the sauna. 20 minutes in there is like a great way to get your heart rate up. Almost kind of simulate what your body temperature will be like when you're in a gear, when you're in your gear and in a fire. I love to work out. I feel like it should always be part of our daily routine, something we do in our downtime. So, you know, so that our bodies can handle the challenges of our job. Yeah, you don't have to be a bodybuilder, but functional strength and endurance are extremely important. You know, it's important to practice how you play, you know. So
definitely,
you can't train in bunker gear, you know, if you got a spare set, you know, get out there, you know, swing them all, hit the tire, whatever. We got to kind of be tactical athletes. So, you know, especially in the ladder. So for our ladder company, we use Duo heavy duty aluminum truss safety ladders.
Mm-hmm.
And they're no joke. We don't have any lightweight ladders on our truck. You know, our bread and butter is our 35 foot extension, and it weighs 153 pounds. So that's, excuse me, that and our extension 20 are pretty much, sorry.
No, you're good.
That and our extension 20 are pretty much our go-tos, you know, our local. So like you said, in North Philly, we have a lot of narrow streets.
Yeah.
Our apparatus can't fit down. So, you know, you might have to park on a corner and then walk like 1,000 feet, you know, with that 153 pound ladder. Plus you got your saw, your tools, and yeah, you know, then you got to raise it. And then you didn't start working yet. So
right.
You're just getting set up. So cardio is huge. We wake up in the middle of the night from a dead sleep, you know, to a full sprint to the truck. You know, your heart's thumping out of your chest. Your adrenaline's going crazy. And, you know, heart disease accounts for like 45% of the reason why firefighters die. So that means if you don't eat right and exercise, you know, you aren't going to make it very long on this job or in this world for that matter.
No, definitely.
If you're out of shape, you know, you're not only putting your own life in danger, but, you know, other guys are in danger too. You know, if you're physically unable to do the job, God forbid you go down, you know, now other guys are putting their lives on the line to, you know, to go rescue you and pull you out. So,
all right.
And this job is deadly enough without, you know, the risk of losing guys to heart attack just from the bells going off. So, we do have a tradition, you know, in the PFD, I'm sure other places too, you know, guys bringing donuts and cake and cookies and pies and ice cream and all that other crap in the station, you know, when they're detailed in or overtime,
uh-huh.
Working in MXD. And, you know, I'd like to see that tradition kind of change a little bit, you know, maybe bring in some fruit or some healthy snacks if you can. you know, we don't need to be eating that crap every day.
For real. For real. Yeah.
But it's all about making, you know, good choices and having willpower. So just because the ice cream's in the freezer doesn't mean you got to eat it, you know. So for me, I try to, you know, bring in oatmeal in the mornings, try to eat that instead of donuts. You know, try to bring in some fruit and eat as few, you know, French fries and chips as possible, and limit those, you know, the fats and empty carbs. You know. But working out during the day is definitely very important.
Okay. Personal question. You said you have a 35 Duo safety Alkalite. Can you single man throw that bitch or no?
Yeah. I mean, I've done it, you know, into a wall where you use the wall to heal it.
Okay. Okay.
Raise it that way. Yeah.
Okay. Have you ever high shouldered it?
No.
No, dude. I tried because I wanted to just do it, and I almost got it. It was on video. I almost got it, but man, they can say that thing weighs 153 pounds. I swear that thing weighs more. I swear it does. Oh, yeah.
I mean, and as you're walking down the street, the further you get down the street, the lower it gets on your shoulder. You know?
Yep.
So by the time you get there, you're almost dragging it there. So
yeah. Yeah.
The thing is no joke. It is heavy. So
absolutely. Okay. Okay. I feel better because you're like, no, I'm just gonna throw it against the building, which I have, and I can do it. But man, anytime I see somebody that can just high shoulder it, single man, I'm like, God, like you, that is a beast of a ladder.
Oh yeah. Yeah, we most of our when we throw ladders, we don't do high shoulder throws. They're mostly
okay.
You know, you got one guy healing it.
Okay.
And you're using your momentum and use most of your legs, you know, to just drive the ladder up. That's mainly the way we do it.
Okay. All right. Perfect. Perfect. I know you wanted to talk about this too. Line of duty deaths in Philly.
Yes.
So it's yours. Go ahead.
So Philadelphia, we've had a lot of line of duty deaths since I've been on. But there's three of those that are very personal to me. Joyce Craig she was a classmate of mine. She died in 2014 on the first floor of a dwelling when a basement fire flashed over, came up the steps, and she wasn't able to make it back out. Matt Letourneau, he was my lieutenant at Engine 45,
mm-hmm.
And he was killed in 2018. and a dwelling fire. When the second floor of the house collapsed while he was operating on the first floor. And we lost Sean Williamson in 2022. He was my lieutenant for at Ladder 14 for 5 years. And he had just rotated to another company a few months earlier. He was also killed in a building collapse shortly after the fire had been extinguished. So we all know that our job is inherently dangerous. And I think that we need to be hyper aware when we're operating in buildings that, you know, they're in disrepair, or in our case, you know, in Philadelphia, they're over 100 years old. So, I mean, we need to train more on firefighting in these types of buildings. And we also need to be cognizant of the amount of time that we're inside and how long the fire's been burning. And I think our incident commanders need to be a little more cautious, you know, be at a point where it's no longer worth the interior attack. The building's no longer salvageable. So Sean Williamson was actually the ladder officer on the fire where Matt Letourneau died. And afterwards, he took part in teaching building construction class for the PFD. And he used the quote, you know, risk a lot to save a lot, risk a little to save a little. And I think he felt maybe that we were interior a little too long on the fire that killed Matt. And he also tried to get the department to devise like a written plan, like on how to handle line of duty deaths. After he saw, you know, firsthand that his guys were not okay. It was a total shit show, you know, total confusion.
Right.
Nobody at my station knew what was going on. You know, guys were trying to deal with the death of their lieutenant, and they didn't even know if they were going to be off the rest of the tour. You know, they're basically, engine was given a loaner SCBA, some spare hose line, and put right back in service that night. So Sean was very vocal in pushing for the department to add resources to help address grief too, and deal with loss and acknowledge PTSD and let guys know that it's okay to not be okay. Our department and our union, we do have an employee assistance program, which are there to help us. But I think they, you know, they might still need a little work. Firefighters are three times more likely to commit suicide than civilians, and I think there should be more awareness of like the warning signs and resources to help handle, you know, all the stress and trauma that we deal with every day. You know, suck it up and deal with it mentality, you know, it doesn't work. And I think we need better ways to help guys process things, you know, so they don't feel like they're going through it alone.
No, everything you said, definitely well said. I 100% agree with you. The only caveat I can see is, I mean, it's great that your department, and I'm sure plenty of other departments, offer EAP, but like knowing firemen, like we firemen don't really want to talk to just, you know, a regular clinician because they won't understand. You know what I mean? Like,
right,
you
yeah,
know as well as I do,
yeah.
Like,
no,
we are a different breed.
Yeah, it definitely has to be another fireman that you're talking to.
Definitely.
There's nobody that's going to understand, you know, the type of stuff that we see. So I agree with you 100%. It definitely should be, you know, from within.
Okay. But I do like how, I mean, because that's how it was for me growing up. It was you listen to the what I call the old heads. You talk back when you were told. You ask questions for sure, which I, you know, because I felt like if I didn't ask questions, I'm just going to look stupid because I don't know what I'm doing. But
right.
The days of the suck it up, you know what I mean? Like, or if you cry, you're looked at or conceived as a bitch and things like all that is, I think it's going away, but I'm sure there are certain places in the country where, you know, if you show emotion, you're kind of looked at as weak or whatever the case
right.
may be. But man, I mean, seeing what we see, seeing what firefighters, EMS, first responders, police see on a daily basis, man, it could definitely take a toll. Cause we're not wired to see the things that, you know, we see. And I knock on wood, I have never been a part of a line of duty death, but I feel like the more an individual or department gets complacent because you have the mentality of this will never happen here, or, you know, if you look at it from a physical fitness standpoint of, you're the slug, you don't do anything, but you tell people, hey, when that bell goes off, I'll be ready to work and go. I mean, you're just lying. You're lying to yourself.
Right,
Definitely
sure.
lying to yourself. And I can't imagine. You said you lost two lieutenants and a friend. So three individuals that were very close to you. I can't imagine what that does to your psyche on like, is it not is it worth it? Because I recently just took I took a class. It was a lecture with I don't like to put myself on the spot. It's his name's gonna come back to me. He's with the he was retired with the FDNY, and man, he lost person after person after person. And he said at one point, like he wanted to quit. I mean, he wanted to be an FDNY fireman since he was little, and it got to the point where he just wanted to give it all up. Like that's
Oh, yeah.
it's gotta take a toll.
Oh, yeah, it definitely makes you second guess, you know, your career and just life in general. You know, it's a lot.
Definitely. Man, but moving forward, has PFD kind of like have your tactics somewhat changed, or like are your officers more aware of like, hey, I'm gonna look at this differently, or I'm gonna give these guys like 5, 10 minutes to work after that. If it's not, we're pulling out.
Yeah, I think definitely some of our chiefs have, you know, have kind of, they're definitely trying to rein us in because we're, you know, like I said, when we go to work, we're in service. We're not, the chief's out front. He's looking at the structure. He's looking at the amount of fire. We're, you know, we might be crawling the hallway. So we don't really see everything that he sees.
Right.
And I think that a lot of our chiefs have seen, you know, just from going through all these line of duty deaths that they, I think that they've learned a lot and they definitely have a time where they're like, you know, after a couple minutes that, you know, you don't have a knock on it. Like, all right, let's regroup here.
Okay.
So I definitely have seen a lot, you know, a lot more defensive,
Okay.
which we should be, you know, they're not saving anything in this 100-year-old building that's vacant. You
Right.
know, we're not
They're just going
trying
to tear it
to save.
down,
Yeah,
right? I
exactly.
mean, okay. No, I mean, I totally get it because it's, I mean, people can kind of say the same with Baltimore. You know, like, why are they going into this, what they call vacant? But in my opinion, it's vacant until the fire department says it's vacant. But, you know, it's that fine balance of, are we really going to send some guys in there or can we just hit it out exterior? You know, it's a debate for sure.
Yes, risk versus reward. I mean, you're not, unless you have, you know, a report that somebody's in there. I mean, it's not worth losing a guy or two over, you know, over something that's going to get torn down.
Definitely. Okay. Personal question for you. You've been on 20 years. Any thoughts of promotion or nah?
None at all. None
None at
at
all. He's like, nope, I'm
all.
good.
Now, for us, for our department, when you get promoted, you get transferred out. You get sent to another station. You get put in a rotation, in a lieutenant's rotation. So, if I got promoted, I might go to South Philly, or I might go to Center City, or and might be working with a whole crew of guys that I've never met before. So, for me, the pay increase is not worth it to me. Plus, most of the time, you're typing on a computer, answering phones, like that's not why I got this job. You know, I'm already at the best company in the city, so I don't want to go anywhere. I don't want to work with a different crew. So the pay increase for me, it's not worth
Love the answer. Love that answer.
it.
But for
I could be
anyone, no,
I could be a
go.
senior man at my station, and then, you know, I get new guys detailed in. You know, we do a lot of training, so I don't need to be a lieutenant to do that kind of stuff. I do it right where I'm at.
Okay. And for anyone that's listening that is on the fence, like, I mean, you know, without a shadow of a doubt, you don't want to promote and you're okay with that. Have you ever had individuals come up to you and go, hey, Jesse, man, you know, you're jam up fireman. We really would love to see you move up. And you're just like I asked that because I want people to know, because you looks like without a shadow of a doubt are like, no, I'm good where I'm at until I retire. So for those that are contemplating it or maybe feeling the pressure, what would you say to them?
I mean, I've had some guys, you know, I always give that same answer, no, like right away. But then I've had some guys that, you know, guys I work with that are like, well, maybe, you know, and they start studying and yeah, I don't try to talk anybody out of it. You know, it's we need good lieutenants and you know, on the job. So, but you know, what you're gaining, especially the younger guys, like I don't think that you really know enough to all of a sudden you're thrust into this position where, you know, you're in charge of a whole crew. And for us, the service clause is 4 years. So if you're a firefighter for 4 years, you can get promoted. You know, you study the right book, say the right things in the test, and next thing you know, you're a lieutenant. You know? And Philadelphia is so different that, you know, guys out of fire school, they might have been in Northeast Philadelphia for those 4 years. You know, you got single family dwellings, you got small businesses, apartment buildings, stuff like that, and it's a lot slower. So they've never been in a fire. They've only had very few calls. So then they get promoted, and next thing you know, they're in Center City, and now they're dealing with subway incidents. They're dealing with high-rise fires. They're dealing with duct elevators. They're dealing with manhole explosions, you know, stuff like they've never seen before. So, and now you're you know, in charge of the whole scene, and you're in charge of crew. So it's tough. I think that it takes at least 10 years before, you know, working at different neighborhoods throughout the city, running
right.
different calls, seeing what to do in different situations, you know, so you have kind of a firm grip on how we, you know, how we respond and how we mitigate these, you know, these emergencies. So 4 years for us, it's not enough time.
It's nothing. Right. Okay. And I love the answer. Because I mean, it took me 15 years to get promoted to, we call it a relief driver, senior firefighter, but it was just the fact that I was having so much fun in the back, man. You're like, I didn't care. Obviously we don't get in this profession for money. I mean, because it's just not there unless you're on the West Coast, but you're paying West Coast inflation rates. But one, I hate whenever you ask a person, hey, why are you going up for promotion? And the first thing is, hey, it's more money. Like, come on. To me, you should want to promote to offer different people in your department, like, you know, advice or tips and tricks, like, or you just want to make the department better as a whole. And I understand people will say, well, if your department isn't where you want to be, the more you move up, the, you know, the chances of you can change that to an extent, because I think if you really want to affect change like that, it's up on the chief level, which I have no desire to do any of that, but you can definitely affect the way your company operates and shut out that white noise. Don't worry about what administration is doing. Worry about what you can control within your four walls.
That's what we're going to do. Yep.
And okay. So that's perfect. I love it. I love it. Another personal question. Are you guys allowed to wear leathers?
You talking about boots?
Leather helmets.
No. We all have the
is yellow
that plastic.
Is that a tradition thing or just asking?
Well, we just got back to leather boots. We had rubbers for, I don't know, 10, 20 years. But we just got back to leather boots, which, you know, but the helmets, that's just, that's what the city buys and that's what they give us. I don't think we're allowed to wear anything else.
Because I was going to ask you, like, if you were like, well, I'll just go buy mine. Because I mean, it's one of those things, you know, you see all the West Coast, or not all the West Coast, but certain West Coast departments, they wear that same type of helmet. And I have tried it on. It is very comfortable. But, you know, you always ask, hey, like, can you guys wear a traditional leather helmet? Or so I guess not.
Yeah, you'd be the only one in the department wearing it.
All right. Let's see here. Let's talk about your YouTube channel before we wrap it up. You did kind of hit on it on why you started it, and it's mainly for your guys to kind of definitely see where you can improve on and things of that nature. But if people don't know where they can get to it, like, I'm pretty much like, it's what I call a shameless plug. I want you to get more subscribers, because I don't work for Philly. Our tactics are definitely different, because I ride a truck, well, really a Quint, but we have to operate. We have a first due. So if we need to be an engine, we are. But how can people find you?
It's just my name. It's just Jesse Oseda. So it's Jesse Oseda. If you search that, it'll come up.
Okay.
Or North Philadelphia Fire, probably.
Okay. And yeah, here was another question. I do know that you respond back to comments, but does it get tiring when you hear from the safety police, the keyboard warriors that are behind a computer screen, and they ask, why do you guys do this, or blah blah blah, and all this other?
It is kind of surprising that how much hate you get. You know,
Right.
like I said, I'm trying to make the whole fire service better, you know, as a whole. Like I want everyone to
Right.
be better. These aren't highlight videos. I'm not, you know, it's not an all-star reel. Like this is just real world conditions on, you
Right.
know, what it looks like. So, and we might run a different way than another city, and that's there's nothing wrong with that. You know, whatever works for you guys, that's great. Maybe some of the stuff we do that's a little antiquated. You know, maybe we need to do a little better job of, you know, making sure we're, you know, packed up or we're, you know, but with the way we run is it's mainly for speed, and we're just trying to get there as quick as possible, get the fire out as quick as possible. And you know, guys jumping on there and just making whatever comments. I'm not going to answer that, but if you people have legit, you know, questions or you know, want to actually talk tactics, I'm all about it, you know.
Okay. All right. What do you what's your favorite topic to drill or teach on?
Definitely it would be racing ladders. You know, because most buildings are different, you know, there's going to be all kinds of different challenges. Anything from wires to trees to, you know, the concrete out front is messed up, and you know, where you heal the ladder and why we're doing it a certain way. It's more of like technique type stuff. That and forcible entry, you know, you can pound on a door all day and it's going to laugh at you. So if you don't use the proper technique, like you're not getting it. And that's, like I said, our list of priorities. That comes before laddering. So,
Right.
you know, we always throw out run fast, let victims out safely, you know, rescue, forcible entry, you know, stuff like that. So kind of in order, like basically the most important things, that's what I try to go over more than anything.
Okay. All right. And last personal question for you. How much longer do you see yourself going? Because you said your dad did 29, you're at 20.
29. It's a good question. I'm not sure. I mean, I'm still hammering away at it. So maybe 5, maybe 10. I do at least 25, maybe 30.
Okay.
But we'll see.
Okay. I mean, because
Definitely.
we all know it's a young man's game, but as long as you take care of yourself, I mean, you can still take care of yourself, but you can't beat Father Time. So it's just
You
it
gotta
was
know.
just personal question.
Yeah, you got to know when it's time to go, you know. But as for right now, you know, hopefully I retire out of ladder 14, so that's my goal.
Okay. All right. Jesse, man, like I said, I truly appreciate you coming on, man. When I was on your page, I was like, I'm trying to figure out how the hell I can contact them. I didn't want to put too much information in the comments because you know there's a bunch of crazies out there. But I truly appreciate you coming on, talking shop, man. It's been great to hear how Philly does things. I love your message behind mental health side, slowing down, focusing on what we need to do as firemen, get that heart rate and that adrenaline down. Because I know I've been there where if I'm driving and they say working fireman, I've my foot's doing that on the pedal because it's like, all right, calm down. Like, you know, I need to act like I've done this before. I love all the tips and information that you're giving out to anyone listening, man. I truly appreciate you coming on.
No problem.
Thank you, sir. Have a good day.
Thank you.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.